morning. This is Sarah Robinson, host of VBS Radio's Conscious Creating. I'd like to welcome our listeners as we continue conversations on the relationship between art and transformation. Tonight I'm joined by David Wilcox, a nationally acclaimed acoustic singer-songwriter whose clear baritone vocals and velvet touch on the guitar have created memorable songs which have moved and inspired listeners of all ages. Welcome, Dave.
Hi, thanks.
You know, I understand that you're touring about right now, promoting your new CD, Vista, and I just want to say off the bat, I appreciate your taking the time to talk with me on one of your precious nights off.
Thank you, my pleasure.
I don't know if you knew, but I'm an actor, and I used to perform doing about 8 shows a week in a theater, and where you take more showers in the theater than you do your own home, can you relate? So I know what, we have Monday nights off, so I know what that's like. It's kind of great. So in 1958, you were born in Ohio, Mentor, Ohio?
Well, actually, close enough, I got there soon.
Oh, you were born in Ohio, but not exactly in Mentor.
Right.
And that's just a suburb outside of Cleveland, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, what did you like to do best when you were a little boy?
I have very little memories of it, but I think that one of the things that really shaped my music, looking back on it, was that I was sort of the peacekeeper of the family. And I could tell what my folks were trying to say to each other, but they couldn't quite communicate. So I was kind of the intermediary.
You have a song about that, don't you?
Yeah, and so I would be explaining, you know, no, I think what he meant was, you know, or vice versa, you know, I think what she was saying was. And so that was one of my real bold memories of childhood. And that, along with, I have this other memory, a really old memory of having a real burning desire to say a kind of a complex idea and not having words for it, not having the ability to communicate a complex emotion. And it's wild that I would remember that, but I think it's interesting that that would be one of the real forming moments, because it turns out that that's something I've really tried so hard to get good at, is being able to communicate difficult, complex issues with real succinct language.
Interesting. I was having a conversation earlier with my daughter, and we were talking about different kinds of brains, and that some of us come into the world with this panoramic lens on our camera, and it sounds like you are one of those people, where you absorbed a lot, but it took a little while to get to the point where you could articulate that picture.
It wasn't until I was 18 that I first started playing guitar. It wasn't until a couple years after that that I really had any desire or facility at all to express myself in terms of lyric, to write a song or anything.
Right.
I did have a real powerful experience when I first let guitar into my life, because I'd listened to it, you know, and I enjoyed the sound, but never really imagined that I was, you know, that I had access to that sort of creative side. And I was at college, and I thought I was just going to do, you know, engineering or something, because I liked, you know, fixing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly there was this whole other side of my personality that opened up. And as soon as I started feeling how good my heart could feel around music, I knew that I had to have that in my life. And it was a slow process of realizing that, well, gee, maybe I'm going to do this for work. That was a surprise to me. I never planned on that.
Mm-hmm.
It was always just that I wanted to have that joy in my life. I wanted to be around that feeling.
Yeah, I know that. So So did you have music or creative activities happening around you growing up?
There was music sort of, you know, like my father enjoyed listening to a lot of different kinds of music in terms of a nice, interesting record collection and would, you know, point out sort of the interesting history about different jazz musicians and stuff. But mostly what I was doing when I was young was just being out of the house.
I read that you used to ride your bike a lot.
Well, even when I was young, like fourth grade, I would be, you know, 7 or 10 miles from home.
Oh, wow. And your mom wasn't worried about you?
Well, strange. When, you know, when my sweetie Nance was asking when she first met my folks, my brother, she asked everybody, you know, what was I like when I was young?
Aww.
And she said that she got the same answer from all three family members. They said, Dave was gone. He was not here. He was out on his bicycle. So apparently it was just my way of staying sane. I was out.
Just keep on going. Much of your early music is nostalgic and has a, I don't know, sort of aching, soulful quality that I, and I'm sure others, find irresistible. It kind of reminds me of something I lost in myself somewhere when I listened to, you know, the songs about the good old days. And I'd like for us to listen to a clip from one of these songs from your early works in the genre, Rusty Old American Dream. It's from your second album, How Did You Find Me Here?
Well, I don't look all that ragged for all the time it's been, but I'm weakened underneath me where my frame is rusted thin. And this year's state inspection I just barely passed. Won't you drive me across the country, boy, this year could be my last. I may tail fin road locomotive from the days of cheap gasoline, and I'm for sale by the side of the road going nowhere. Rusty old American dream. I rolled off the line in Detroit back in 1958. Spent 3 days in the showroom, that's all I had to wait. I've been good to all who own me, so have no fear. Come on, boy, put your money down and get me out of here. I may tail fin road locomotive from the days of cheap gasoline, and I'm for sale by the side of the road going nowhere. Rusty old American. Now this car needs a young man to own him. One who will polish the chrome.
It's a great song.
Thanks much.
Do you ever get tired of playing the songs from the old days, or are they still fun for you?
There are songs that don't get played night after night just because when I'm sort of listening for what does this crowd need, I don't tend to come across that song. I don't feel it. I don't not attracted to it, and I just kind of forget about them. But the ones that feel like I can still believe it, still get inside it, you know, still understand it, and more than that, still be learning from it. Those are the songs that I tend to keep real current. So, yeah, there's songs that I look back on and think, I couldn't really sing that with much conviction now. And that's one of the big things that has shaped my songwriting, is that my voice is, it's not that good at singing songs that I don't really believe. it's almost as if my voice has this kind of truth detector in it, where if I try to sing a clever little song that I don't really believe, my voice just doesn't work. It doesn't sound good.
Interesting.
And so that's kind of one of the things that made it really important for me to make sure that I wrote stuff that really felt true. And so the songs that I kind of have outgrown, I just choose not to sing. Cause, you know,
is that one of them? Be honest with me.
No, the Rusty Old American Dream is a very current song because I never imagined that that was on the surface. That it's, you know, about this vehicle, but it's also about having some courage about this whole country, about you know, imagining that it can still, you know, be what it was intended to be, you know. So there are lots of songs like that that I have, you know, lots of layers to, and I can sing them from different places in my heart depending on, you know, what would really serve. And I don't really have, you know, particular favorite songs, well, except for the latest one I've written. That's always the favorite one.
Of course.
But the song that's my favorite is usually just the one that is sort of like the best medicine for the person I happen to be singing for. Mm-hmm. There's always, you know, somebody who's going through something that, here's a song, and then it becomes their song, and I hear it real clear again, and I hear it sort of through their understanding. I see it in new ways that I wouldn't have seen it before.
So it sounds like you're saying that you feel there's a healing element to the music you perform and write.
Well, I know that's always been the case for me. The songs that are worth singing for me are the songs that hold a vision of not just some new point of view, but a way of seeing. It's a way of being in the world, a way of learning how to really appreciate this time that I'm given, this life that I'm given, and see challenges as just a way of getting to the heart of how I'm not, you know, there are songs that show up for me, even songs that I am writing, that don't feel like I completely understand the meaning of it. It's more like it holds a picture of who I might be. And one of the best ways of trying to express this is, imagine if you were visited by your future self. Imagine that you got this visit from somebody who you might become in 20 years if you, you know, did things right. And that person would be able to tell you, you know, watch out for this and don't let yourself drift into this or that distraction, because they know your life story. They know who you can become. They also know what the most important thing. They also know, you know, what is the element of your story that's going to really make your life mean something. And they'd be able to tell you. That kind of information is what shows up for me in song. That kind of information is the stuff that is whispering to my heart, don't miss this chance to make this life really matter, to really mean something, to really tell the story of my life. Not just fill up the time, but instill that time with a meaning that matters to me. And so that's the kind of points of view, that's the kind of way of seeing that the songs can offer. And I don't quite understand why, except that I know that my heart is very cracked open to music. I feel it deeply, and it it has a powerful. There are ways of discerning that I have about music that I don't have about any other thing. There's the way of discerning if a song is kind of sort of true or really true that really are powerful in my heart. And because of that, I can navigate in more subtle ways. I have better guidance, I think.
Well put. If you've just joined us on Conscious Creating with Sarah Robinson, I'm talking with singer-songwriter David Wilcox, whose latest CD is Vista, available from What Are Records. Well, going back just a little bit, if you'll let me, you found the guitar a little later than most professional musicians, as you mentioned, at 18. I'd like to hear about the girl in the stairwell at Antioch College.
The sound that I heard coming up through the stairwell was live music, and it had this wonderful sort of bright kind of resonant, almost an echo to it. The sound because of the acoustics of the stairwell, it just was the kind of sound that you could get inside. It was a sound that was encompassing, and so I was really in love with listening. I was just very quietly listening, sort of one floor higher in the stairwell than she was, and when I heard her play a particular song that a friend of mine back home wanted to figure out how to play. He was the guitar player in our little circle of friends.
Is this like a Joni Mitchell song? Or
no, it was a Bob Dylan song.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so I heard that song, and I said, oh, can you write down the chords? Because I have a friend at home that would really love to play that song, but he doesn't know. I can't figure it out. And she said, well, I can't really write it down because it's in an open tuning. It's different, but I can show you. And I said, no, I'm not a guitar player.
Did you know what open tuning was at that point?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. But she said, well, you can just put your fingers, I'll show you where to put your fingers, and then you can show him. So I thought that was easy. So she showed me a simple kind of way of playing this, the sort of main riff of the song, you know. And then I just wanted to practice all night so I wouldn't forget. So I was just listening to the guitar, and that was the way I pictured it. I didn't imagine I was the guitar player. I just imagined, you know, I just wanted to listen to that sound, and I could set it in my lap and listen to it, and, you know, I could hear it as much as I wanted. I didn't have to wait for some guitar player to come play it for me. But, you know, it was, I still imagined that it was not me telling it what to do. It was me just listening, just kind of receiving.
Sounds to me like you were just showing up.
Well, the fun part is I still picture guitar that way. I still picture guitar as not something I want to, I don't want to boss it around. I don't want to tell it what to do. What I want to practice, what I want to get good at, is being surprised by it, is hearing the sounds that lead me to feel things that I haven't felt before.
You know, I read a quote from that period which intrigued me. You said something like, I was learning a lot about music and sex at Antioch and didn't think I needed to pay tuition to do that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I was traveling for 4 years, sort of imagining that I was at the point where, okay, here's when you have to sort of figure out what you want to, you know, major in. And I thought, well, that means, I thought it meant job training back then.
Yeah.
I thought it meant you have to know what you want to do with your life. And I had no idea, so I just thought, well, that's sort of the foundation. I need to start by figuring out what I want to, what's most important, what I want to do with my life. Then I could decide what I want to, you know, study and all that. So I just traveled around Europe and worked, you know, wherever I needed to, and just had a time of walkabout. Except I was bicycling, so maybe it was a rollabout.
So did that feel like a renunciation in any way? In other words, something that you were detaching from that didn't feel authentic to you at the time?
I think I did want to find out who I might be. And in order to do that, you know, we all have to kind of give ourselves room from all the people who are, who can sort of define us, the people who kind of, in their eyes, sort of know exactly who we've always been and who we're going to be. And to have some distance from that is a great way to let yourself experiment with, well, who else could I be? You know, what's the, what's not just my habit, but the real possibility in my heart that I could be.
And on that four-year odyssey, did you have a little trailer attached to your bike?
Well, actually, that was that.
Or was that later?
Bike trip was much later when I was leading bike trips for high school kids. There was a cross-country trip that I was pulling a little trailer. Yeah.
So, did you have a guitar with you during
the
4 years?
Yeah. Well, some there were some trips when I would travel with, some without. Yeah.
So you were working, developing yourself as a musician.
I wouldn't have probably said it that way. I didn't imagine that music was going to be what I did. I just knew that music was sort of the compass that guided me toward what felt most authentic.
Interesting. Really interesting point. Because I think some of us as artists think that the art is the thing. Whether it's playing music or painting, being on stage.
It does seem that way at first.
You it know, does, the, doesn't it?
The focus would be the particular, you know, the way that spark of joy shows up. The, you know, like maybe this pull in your heart is because the world needs more songs or, you know. But it was pretty obvious early on that if I focused on the particular, you know, manifestation, you know, like cranking out more songs, that it didn't have the thing that I wanted. It was sort of like, yeah, it's true that a compass is a really valuable thing because it does have that sensitivity. It does line itself up with something that we can't feel directly. But the compass is not the destination. It's just the guide. The journey is much longer. Keep the guide with you. Keep the compass with you. But you're not walking toward it. You're just using it to, you know, orient.
Well, I particularly love your songs about, you know, the old unrequited love and pain and reconciliation, because it just brings up a lot from the way it used to be. And, you know, all the good stuff. And in a way, as I've grown with your music, those songs are really not about sex and love as much as they are just about life. And I'd like for us to listen to a part of another one from your early years, a love song that made it to the radio on an alternative station in Houston, Texas, where I was living, and my husband discovered it and found it for us. So this is Language of the Heart.
We made our took off your dress in the moonlight to sleep beneath the sky. Your touch was a warm summer potion. Your kiss made the whole mountain fly. And you looked deep within me and smiled at the tears in my eyes. Now you can say that you always were honest, and your words were clear from the start. But it's more than just words that got spoken. There was language of the heart. I won't keep on calling your number if you never have the time. I don't want to claim you or blame you, but you're always on my mind. You had no idea I would love you. It comes as a total surprise.
Does that song have any resonance for you still?
Well, that is, yeah, it's a great one to sing. I can remember the story that wrote it, but still I can make it very current when I need to play it for somebody else. It's cool.
It is a cool song. You know, I feel that your music has matured a lot as you've matured and evolved as a musician and I imagine as a person, although I don't know you personally. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the thing I like about the music is that it definitely stays ahead of me. The songs are, you know, about who I'm becoming. Yeah.
One of my guests, future guest, writer Natalie Goldberg, I don't know if you know her work, but she said that what people are really interested in when they read novels are the authors themselves, and she encourages writers to tell the truth and make themselves vulnerable in their work, and sometimes I find this is kind of scary. I don't know. You don't seem to be afraid of making yourself cracked open and vulnerable.
Yeah, I think if you do that part way, it is vulnerable, but if you do it all the way, it's not.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, you know, if you have nothing to hide kind of thing, if you're willing to sort of trust your own heart, trust your own creative process, and then dive into songs. I really think that the workings of our heart is a great design. I think there's really nothing to fear in the depth of it. And so I love when a song just leads me right to the heart of it. And, you know, at times it's really powerful. It's sort of like going through, you know, 5 years of you know, psychological stuff in about, you know, 5 minutes.
It just
pulls you right through. So,
yeah. Could you give a specific example?
I love the intensity of it. Well, there are songs that showed up that just had to be sung because they were about issues that I kind of didn't want to face, like Covert War.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once the song showed up, then I could take it to the people involved and sing it for them and say, you know, does this sound to you like the start of a conversation we should have?
That's great, Dave.
Yeah, it was.
Did you really do that?
Oh, yeah. That was the first people I sang it for, and that was a great chance for some.
Did it open up some dialogue?
Yeah, it was great.
Wow. And just so our listeners know what we're talking about, in case they don't know the song, can you just, in a quick second, tell them what it's about?
Well, the scene is the setting around the Thanksgiving table when everyone's trying to be nice, and there's all this undercurrent of tension and resentment in the whole family system, and, you know, nobody's talking about it. And so the song basically brings up that this is something that we got to talk about, and yeah, it was an easy conversation to have once we had the boldness to jump in, but it could have gone another few decades without the song. So.
Was that a healing?
Yeah.
So it was transformative. Your art transformed some relationships.
Yeah.
Amazing. I remember when I first heard that song, knowing that you, as an artist, had to have experienced something like that, or you couldn't write about it so beautifully. And so many of us have had similar experiences. So, and I also remember thinking, must have been the middle child.
Well, only two kids, so older brothers I have. Yeah.
Because usually the firstborn is the one that's, you know, screaming. Not trying to be the peacemaker, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, your commitment to your own truth has manifested it in your approach to your to the business of music. And I like to talk about this with artists because, you know, we're making a living doing it. And you've produced albums on 6 different labels and said it's possible to market music as fashion, but it shouldn't be. It's sacred ground.
Yeah, I know that if you're marketing something that doesn't have a real inherent value, like, you know, just kind of sugar water kind of stuff, you know, you can try and associate it with a certain demographic and try to, you know, if people identify, I want to be that kind of person, you know, then they'll be easily led toward this product. And, you know, that's a great way to sell things that really need a lot of advertising, things that don't have a lot of inherent value. But the difference, I think, is that when music or any other kind of art really speaks somebody's truth, you get to see the world through their eyes. It's a chance to have company in all the emotions. The whole spectrum of experience and emotion that humans can have is all different kinds of music for all different kinds of experiences. And what I love about it is it does give us a chance to see the world fresh, to see the world through someone else's perspective. And that has in itself just such a cool value, such a great thing. That I think it's a shame to market music according to segregation of demographics. I think that we have so much common ground in our emotional experiences that there's a few record stores that are organized more just, you know, alphabetical, easy to find. If you know who sang it or you know what the song was kind of stuff, you can find it. But you don't have to sort of separate music according to fashion. And many years ago, Frank Zappa was talking about how people don't like music for the way it sounds. They don't really buy music for listening. They buy music for sort of like a T-shirt that you wear that has a certain sort of logo or brand name. You buy it more for how people see you. And when I first read that, I thought, oh, I'm so glad that he was able to articulate that. Because it is so funny that there would be something as powerful and useful as music that is marketed as if all it was a sorting out of, you know, different kinds of people, when really the main thing that it offers is the ability to have compassion, to understand what someone else is feeling, to really be with a lot of different kinds of people.
One of the things I'm trying to do with Conscious Creating, this radio show, is to support and highlight the work of people who see that, Dave. And I was really impressed looking at what our records and your label and studying sort of
their approach to marketing music. Has that been a good relationship so far?
Yeah, there have been different settings through the years on different labels, and I really like the people. They're in it for the same reasons I'm in it for. It's great. It's really fun.
If you're just joining us on Conscious Creating with Sarah Robinson, I'm talking with singer-songwriter David Wilcox, whose latest CD is Vista, available from What Art Records. Over the last decade, your music seems to have, increasingly become an expression of your faith and spirituality. Has this been one of your intentions, or have the songs just kind of reflected what's going on in your inner life?
I think that, as usual, music is showing me where my heart is drawn, where I get my joy, where I get my feeling of being really alive. And over the years, I've been getting better at being able to write about stuff that is pretty elusive, pretty difficult to really communicate. And so now I'm able to write songs that are clearer, I think, about this feeling of being very much alive and awake and knowing this life, knowing this time that I'm given, not taking it for granted. I really love the experience of the Out Beyond Ideas CD, which is songs that my wife Nance and I wrote to lyrics that have been around for 1,000 years. They're ancient mystic poets that are, although they're recent translations into English, they're from all over the world, and the fun part about this CD is that when you hear these songs, they speak of the experience of the sacred, and they may be speaking from, you know, different eras and different geography, but they're speaking a common experience of the sacred. And all these experiences of knowing the joy of this life, of knowing this I wish I had words for it, but that's why I love playing those mystic poetry songs, because they do have the words that capture that mystical experience of the depth and awe and wonder of this life.
I'd just like to clarify for the listeners that in 2005 you released an album together with Nance Pettit, your singer-songwriter wife, called Out Beyond Ideas, and that this work is part of a commitment that you and Nance seem to be living to peace and raising social consciousness. You and Nance write on your website, "When we become too entrenched in defending our own ideas, it is difficult to listen beyond and meet in the field of peace. Someone who is not in the throes of self-defense is needed as a reminder that everyone will win if everyone's needs are considered. Otherwise, everyone will lose." And that's just a beautiful articulation of what that piece of work seems to be about. You did it as a nonprofit vehicle for the Center for International Development and Conflict Management, did you not?
Mm-hmm.
And you're still doing concerts together, aren't you?
Yeah.
How is that working with her?
Oh, it's wonderful.
You harmonize not only musically with your wife, but it seems this is just a really special thing.
That makes me smile. It's true. The harmony goes deep. That's true. This whole year, we've been out as a family traveling in our little Airstream trailer, because our son Nathan is, he turned 13 a while back, and he's this is the time for us to be out seeing all the national parks. So we're doing a kind of a slow circle around the seasons, going south in the winter and north in the summer. And that has been a great time of singing these songs together with Nance, and just finding that we're led into wonderful coincidences, meeting great new friends, and seeing all the beautiful national parks all over this country.
Mm. And there are just, there are lots of pictures on your website that you've taken, and you've been very, very generous and about allowing your fans to share that experience with you.
There have been a couple of situations where people have come out and met up along the way.
Oh, really?
At various campsites. There's been some
How's
great
that?
Fire.
That's yeah. great. My husband and I just built a big fire ring circle that'll seat 18 kids for our teenagers in the backyard. We're kind of freaks because we're inside 285 in Atlanta, you know, and that's not the thing that people do. But it just seemed like the right thing because there's a lot of community built around that and around the guitar and music, and I have to get you out there someday.
It is fun how things like a big fire circle, it's an opportunity to have that ancient experience of let's draw near, let's be together, let's come toward the light, mm-hmm. let's stay warm. And it's a very similar experience to what people can have when there's music around, live
right.
music. And although we hear so much of our music from machines these days, we still have that wonderful experience of when a group comes together around a storyteller or a musician. There is a feeling of, as a group, we give ourselves permission to focus in, to feel that as a group we can go deeper, as a group we can let ourselves feel these stories and kind of give ourselves to it. It's fun.
It must be fun to be the leader in that.
Well, it feels so much easier when I don't think of it in terms of leading, but I really feel like following. I feel like
really?
I'm listening to the group. I'm listening to where they need to go. And I help orchestrate. I help...
Do you facilitate then rather than lead?
Yeah. I kind of keep the group together and, you know, kind of keep the... mend the fences, keep the strays from getting away. But the real focus is, you know, what's the group feeling now? What are they ready to feel? Where can we go from here? Step by step. That's what the thing I do best in a live performance is make it unique to the group, I think.
I'd like to play another song. This is... from East Asheville Hardware, a really, really fun live collection of songs. And this one called For Real, I think is a good segue from where we were on understanding community commitment and spirituality. So we'll listen to that.
Death took the husband of a neighbor of mine on a highway with a drunk at the wheel. She told me, keep your clean hands off the laundry he left, and don't tell me you know how I feel. She had a tape that he'd sent her from a Holiday Inn that she never played much in the day. When I heard him say I love you through the window at night, I just stayed the hell away. There's a hole of the prettiest life, so the lawyers and the prophets say. Not your father, nor your mother, nor your lover's gonna ever make it go away. And now there's too much darkness in an endless night to be afraid of the way we feel. Let's be kind to each other, not forever, but for real. My father never put his parachute on in the Pacific back in World War II. He said he'd rather go down in familiar flame than get lost in that endless blue. Some of that blue got into my eyes, and we never stopped fighting that war until I first understood about endlessness, and I loved him like never before. There's a hole in the middle of the prettiest life, so the lawyers and the prophets say. Not your father, nor your mother, nor your lover's gonna ever make it go away.
I hadn't intended to play that whole song, but it really moves me.
I love that. That's a Bob Frankie song.
Talk show hosts aren't supposed to cry on the air, are they?
I just love that he writes so well. There's a kindness in his writing, and yet he's ferocious in terms of his bravery about getting right to the heart of things.
Right.
It is really fun that a song like that has that same experience we were just talking about, you know, it's like gathering around a campfire. That song has that intensity, that it has this burning kind of emotion to it, and yet it's the kind of thing that there was a song that Bob Frankie wrote that was describing how miraculous it is that songs can gather us in like that. And the way he described it, I'll just sort of talk you through the first verse of this Bob Frankie song. He says, there are songs that never ask you anything. It's as if the singer, you know, strumming the guitar is just beating against the wood. And there are lines that soothe the singer's heart to sing. And that's good. But there are songs that... There are lines that ring so true. I wish I could remember exactly how I understand this lyric.
You did great.
There are songs that circle in your mind, seek your heart, and find it, and seize it like a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about that kind of honesty when somebody is willing to get right to the heart of what matters most to them. In some ways, that may seem really vulnerable, but there is a power of the heart. There's a strength there. There is the kind of experience like when you walk into a place that feels sacred to you from whatever tradition you are. Imagine you just kind of set foot in this place, and it has this ability to kind of... you don't just kind of talk about meaningless stuff. You kind of find yourself listening for what really needs to be spoken, what really matters. And I love how some songs just hold that place. They're like when you're in a conversation with a good friend, and their voice cracks, and they get to the heart of what really matters to them, and they get to a place where this is memories in the making. You know it.
There's intimacy.
And how you react to it is going to define the friendship. And those moments when the conversation gets real, they hold you to kind of, I was going to say a higher standard, but it's really a deeper standard. It's a way of daring to really be all the way there with your heart. And those are the times that get written about in novels, and those are the moments that matter in movies, when our lives really get to the heart of it, the place where we're cracked open.
Complete truth-telling, huh?
And I love how songs can do that with this sort of Gandhi-like bravery. A song that can just, you know, lie down in front of, you know, the approaching army and say, okay, this is where I have to take my stand. I'm going to do it with kind of politeness. I'm going to do it with kindness. I'm going to do it with the heart. But I'm not backing down. And there's this wonderful strength to it that's reflected in songs like that. And I love what just happened with it, because it's the kind of song that, you know, when you get your finger on the button and you think, well, I'll just fade this out, the song just says, nah.
Well, you can't fade it out when you got tears running down your cheeks,
yeah,
and you got to say something. So, but that's life, and that's art. And your voice, even though you didn't write that song, your voice knows that song, and the guitar knows that song, and your heart knows that song.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'd be remiss in keeping all of this lofty and ethereal and spiritual throughout our whole time together tonight, because that's not all of you, Dave. One of the things that I like about your music and having seen you a couple of times in concert is your irreverence. Are you still irreverent?
Well, there has to be funny songs. With a group of people, it's the fastest way to get trust going.
There you go.
The whole group with each other. You know, from the storyteller to the listener, there has to be humor. That's the fastest way into to really build that trust.
And there are a lot of those songs on that 1996 East Asheville Hardware. Do you still play a lot of those in
concert? I do.
This is a live album, and you really shine in live performance. And I've heard you say that, or I've read that you have said that that's the way that's what you do best. It's what you love to do.
Yeah, it makes it present tense.
So one of the songs from this CD that's very irreverent and very, very naughty. You know which one I'm going to...
I don't, I actually.
You really
don't? Several.
You're sure?
Which one?
Well, this is one that sometimes people kind of freak out when you sing it, you know, especially if they're very rigid and they're thinking about language. The Mango song.
Oh, that one. Actually, I was right up till when you said that, I was thinking it was another one.
What were you thinking? Which one?
But, yeah, Mango song is a great one. And I had the experience when I was out playing in one of my favorite venues, this big venue called Chautauqua in Boulder, Colorado.
Chautauqua.
And I met somebody outside the venue, and she was saying, oh, can I make a request? There's this song I really need to hear. It really changed my life, and I was thinking it was going to be one of, you know, like, Show the Way. One of
Carpenter
the,
Story.
Kind of spiritual song. She said, could you play the Mango song? And basically the Mango song is just this wonderful sort of getting rid of a you know, terrible relationship, just kind of shaking it off. And she said that, you know, it absolutely changed her life. And so I do know that some of these songs definitely find a significance and a power in unexpected ways.
Can you give the 20, 30 second lead down?
The shaking off of this relationship is it was a funny song that was written in a moment when I was in a conversation with somebody who was talking about this relationship that had just gotten out of, and so she was saying, you know, when you love somebody and they dig you around, doesn't it really suck? And so to sing that as if it were a lyric is just kind of a great little joke. It was something that happened when I sang it one night sort of spontaneously an hour after I heard this person say it. And so since it was recorded, it got to be a song.
So let's hear it loud and clear.
when you love somebody and they dick you around, say, doesn't that really suck? When you love somebody and they dick you around, doesn't that really suck? I was driving and crying. I was trying to see it. I almost ran down the school kid coming in front of me. Cause I had my head out the window. I was just trying to explain, but I just yelled out my wisdom like I'm not insane.
All right, now I was able to fade out of that one.
Yeah.
That's a great song, Dave.
Thanks.
Really funny. And of course, we don't have time to play all of them, but the other one, and I wonder if this is the one you thought I was talking about, was the Chuck Brodsky Traffic Man.
Oh, right.
What's that called? I can't remember.
Blow Him Away.
Yeah, Blow Him Away. I should have remembered that, yeah. Chuck's a funny guy. I actually met him and need to have him on the show. Is he still touring around?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. If you've just joined us on Conscious Creating, I'm talking with singer-songwriter David Wilcox, whose latest CD is Vista, available from What Are Records, and what an amazing new album this is. You said that it was a CD about coming alive. What do you mean by that?
After the experience with the Mystic Poetry record, Out Beyond Ideas, I kind of got a whole new standard of what's possible, what I can ask for from music, what I come to music for. And so these songs that remind me of those times when life is big and deep and rich and full, and kind of remind me to not be satisfied with the sort of shallow surface kind of, you know, mundane, but really to remind myself of so much more that's possible. And so yeah, music does hold a possibility of how good life can be, and I love being reminded of it. So there are songs on that CD, like Vista, which is about being by the side of somebody you love who's ready to make that transition to leave this world. And there are songs like Party of One, which is about getting out from underneath the sort of storm of mundane thoughts that kind of keep us insulated from really feeling life. There's songs like the name of that toward the end of the record. Oh man, there's
I wish I could help you. I don't have it in front of me.
That's all right. But what?
Is it the one with all the harmony? Letting go.
Oh, that's another great
that's
one.
The harmonies are so tight on that.
But I was thinking about just the voice and guitar one that is oh well.
Well, I'm going to play a bit of Into One.
Oh, that's a whole other one. That was showing the sort of juxtaposition of the hope that kids have about this world and how humans might actually get it together and be able to communicate with one another.
And timely.
Because it seems so possible.
Yeah.
And yet juxtaposed with that in the song is the mom putting her kids to sleep, you know, and it's sort of this wartime setting. Yeah.
And it doesn't feel, well, we can talk about it. Let me just play a little bit of it.
Say goodnight. Now the window's broken. turn out the light. Pray they're safe from the war. Swallow the pride, felt but never spoken. This is the terror we learn to endure. Now the dark time comes. What is this world going through?
That sometimes you don't recognize the patterns in songs when you're doing a CD until later, and that some of the songs on Disto came to you before you were really even able to sing them with conviction. And you're ready now?
Yeah, there's this group of songs. We had a lot to choose from, and there were especially the real joyful songs. There are a couple of them that I had had from before that the songs had showed up way ahead of time and kind of showed what my life was moving toward, but I wasn't there yet, so I couldn't really sing them with conviction when they first showed up. But at this point, I can really stand in that experience and sing them. So it's fun.
David Wilcott, thanks for talking with me tonight. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope we'll have a chance to continue the dialogue sometime in the future.
Thank you much.
I encourage our listeners to learn more about Dave and his music by checking out his website at www.davidwilcox.com. Thank you for joining us on Conscious Creating this and every Thursday evening. We hope you'll visit our website at www.consciouscreating.com to let us know what you thought about tonight's show. Conscious Creating is made possible through my collaboration with Susan Pearson, associate producer, and the generosity of Donald and Doug Newsom at BBS Radio. This is your host, Sarah Robinson, wishing you a fruitful week of Conscious Creating.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.